Hello, I'm Alan Davis. You are listening to the Tuesday Club. This is the Arsenal podcast. And I've got Damian Harris with me this morning. How are you, D?
Hey, very good. Thank you very much for asking.
Yeah, not too bad.
Optimistic, full of, you know, the joys of spring.
Okay. Type of pooler is there.
Hey. Hello, mate. How are you doing? Yeah, I'm not too bad, actually.
I've been for a while.
That's been a while. I was late out of bed today. I had my jab this week.
Have you?
Yeah.
What brand did you get?
Oh, bougie over here. We went Pfizer.
Pfizer.
Yeah. So and I think I should have had it earlier on, but then all those years of lying about my age caught up with me, so I was a bit further down. I was a bit.
24-year-olds aren't eligible yet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's when I saw Obafemi Martins in the queue as well that I realised that that we've both been caught out. But good to be here again.
Obafemi Martins, did he lie about his age? Is that just general Nigeria joke?
It was just a general Nigeria joke. It was always up for when he burst onto the scene as a 17-year-old. Was it Inter Milan or was he in Russia first? Where did he start? I feel like it was Inter Milan.
Yes,
but he was. Let's just say he was the biggest at school. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. What about Eboué? Eboué turned up age 21 with the thickest moustache you've ever seen in your life.
It's been like someone who we sit with, who I went to school with, Bradley. Bradley's been the same height and build since he was about 12, which made him absolutely lethal as a teenage kind of footballer and rugby player. So maybe Obafemi Martins is that, and maybe I'm just giving him a hard time. Maybe. And maybe Kanu is actually a year younger than me as well.
No, I don't know how Kanu is, but he's run like an old man since he first signed for Arsenal.
He did.
My favourite one was when the Nigeria under-17s World Cup squad. Remember that? They came up with a new way of testing for age. Sprung it on the Nigerian squad, and 15 of them got sent home for being too old.
Still feels like a fix.
What was the method? Was it? Can you remember what the method was?
I think it's something to do with measurement of the wrist or something.
For some reason I was confusing it with trees and going, you cut the wrist off.
Cut the hand off and have a look in there. You count the rings.
Cut the rings in the wrist. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Well, listener, we are recording on, it's not the morning actually, it's lunchtime on Saturday the 15th of May. No game this weekend for the glorious Arsenal. No FA Cup final this year, feels a bit weird. We normally have one of those.
Yeah.
So we're kicking around. I'm assuming, I don't know, that our match against Crystal Palace has been pushed into midweek to try and admit fans, is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there are going to be a bunch of... How many is it, D? Is it 4,000? Does that feel right?
I think it's something like that.
At Selhurst.
Yeah. And then we've got fans at home for the home game against Brighton at the weekend as well.
Yeah.
Super Sunday. So
Super Sunday.
You call it Super Sunday. I call it St. Tottenham's Day.
It might be the day.
It could.
I saw nudge above Ryan Mason's Lily Whites.
That would be.
Have they come up with this schoolboy coach? When they sat Mourinho, does he take 9 coaches with him? So there's just nobody left the club who's got a badge apart from Ryan Mason.
Yeah.
They can't phone anyone up. They couldn't phone Glenn Hoddle or someone up and say, what are you doing for the next couple of weeks?
I'm surprised Harry Redknapp didn't chip up. Maybe he was at the training ground calling David Levy.
Imagine the invoice that he would send
to
Levy. How many games is it? 3? Yeah, 5 mil. Plus bonuses. And I want a car and... use of a house.
Yeah.
He would have got some money back because Mourinho's taken the Roma job, so he wouldn't have had to wait for massive gardening leave. So some of that could have been funneled off to Harry Redknapp.
Harry could have. But they could have come to some arrangement with Harry or somebody. Anyway, Mason's doing the gig, and they had a shocking defeat at Leeds. and it's all good fun. That's all we've got to look forward to, really, isn't it? This toying, trying to get above them. We're in ninth. Now, we did win a game last week. We somehow won, or earlier this week, we somehow managed to beat Chelsea 1-0 at Stamford Bridge, which actually really cheered me up a lot. Just the outcome.
Double.
Yeah, we beat them twice this season, and we beat them in the cup final last August.
Yeah.
So suddenly, after all these years of being beaten over the head by the Rubles, and we just had that one amazing 5-goal win, which is now 10 years ago when Robin van Persie scored a hat trick.
Is it not 10 years ago?
Yeah,
that's horrendous.
It is horrendous, and just go there and get beat every season. Sometimes badly.
Oh,
was that the John Terry slip game?
Yes, that was okay. The 5-3, wasn't it?
The 5-3. Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
well, I heard.
But did we have the six? Wasn't the 6-0 Arsenal's the 1,000th?
It was his 1,000th game. Yeah,
one. Oh, well, Kieran Gibbs got sent off in a case of
when it should have been
the Lenny Henry sending off.
It should have been Alexander Chamberlain.
I heard from a Chelsea mate of mine this week who reminded me that it always used to, like, we used to beat them for fun, didn't we?
Oh, every year. We knocked them out in the FA Cup 4 years in a row.
And then
they were sick of the sight of Arsenal until the money came, and then they knocked us out of the Champions League, and that was the day our lives all changed completely. That's the day. Really, there is a date you can pin it on. That is the date when Makélélé and Lampard and all them came down, and we thought, hang on a minute, this isn't Chelsea. Who's this?
Oh.
No, we did do the double over them that season in the league and go, you know, that was the invincible season. But that game when Wayne Bridge got in and scored that last minute winner.
I can still remember
where it all changed, my friends. That was the day to check out of football. You put your money in the British Basketball League.
Yeah. Oh, that was depressing. But I thought we were good.
Of course you did, Damien.
You always do.
Of course you thought we were good. Go on, tell us.
No, but...
What was good? Tell me why.
I think the fact that we scored early...
Scored a goal? That was good.
Okay. That's one for Conor
May.
For Conor May. Keep going, D.
I see the way this is going. I can see the looks on your faces. We played a defensive game because we had scored when we did.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so we didn't have to be so expansive. But I'm just pleased that we managed the game well. There you go. Surely even you two can agree that that was something.
Game management. Game management and goal scored.
Clean sheet. Three at the back.
Yes.
First time for a while he's put three at the back.
A return to the way that we beat the good sides last year by not being good.
Yeah, end of last season, the three at the back, low block, on the break with Aubameyang, except his powers someone's put some kryptonite in his socks or something, and he doesn't seem to be half the player he once was. But
malaria,
that was
kryptonite.
Basically it. Yeah, malaria, yeah, that might be it.
Saka struggled a little bit popping up on the right is a bit...
The right back. What is he doing? He's got three right backs on the bench. I mean, honestly, now I just laugh. I see these things. What is he doing now? Why are there three right backs on the bench? Why has he put Saka there? It's just to accommodate Odegaard. He must have promised Real Madrid as a condition that he'll pick him every week. He must have done. Because you would never pick Odegaard ahead of Saka. No one who ever would under any circumstances unless he was playing for Norway.
And he got... So I don't understand. What's this thing about Gabriel and Holding playing together? Or not playing together normally? Because they obviously did this week. But he's been trying to avoid that because...
I don't know. He seems to favour Holding and Mari or Marie. As all the conversations start calling him Marie.
Where did that happen? I didn't get that memo about Pablo
Marie. He's called Marie. Yeah.
You didn't get a silver bullet in the post along with a microphone saying, say it like this.
Martin Tyler.
Yeah. An ominous voice note didn't appear on you. It's Marty.
Yeah.
Bit of a weird one.
John for... Champion's left ear in an envelope.
Bit of a weird one for Kai Havertz, that they set him up for that. I thought that was ultimate disrespect, Kai Havertz missing that. That shows that they weren't taking us seriously. If we weren't in ninth, if we were challenging, he would have at least put that on target.
That was a weird miss, wasn't it? He took three touches from halfway, three perfect touches, where he knocked the ball twice forward and then knocked it further forward, getting himself away from the defender. Perfect touch to set him up for the shot. Pass it in the goal and he spooned it over the bar. It's weird.
He just thought, I'll have
Martinelli another. Showed him how... You should have watched Martinelli.
Yes.
How you break from up the halfway line.
Yes.
You thought he'd have another go in another minute. No, but look, we did defend pretty well. Chelsea... I saw today, actually, I was reading a Thomas Tuchel interview. He said he's still angry about how they played, how they squandered chances. So, fair enough.
He made some remarks afterwards, didn't he, about he changed too many, and there's one particular change he made he wished he hadn't, and then wouldn't say what it was. And I think I couldn't quite work it out if that was genuine or if it was a psychological masterstroke.
Like envelopes in the
on his squad. Yeah,
they all hear
the interview and they're all thinking, "Oh, was it me? Which one of us was it?"
From the Brendan Rodgers School of Man Management.
Well, Kevin, the Alex Ferguson. The Alex Ferguson's the one who could actually do it, right?
Yeah,
use lot to the squad players. Use lot are important. Every single one of you is important to Manchester United, important to me. We need you this season, but one of you's going to let me down, and then walked away. That's brilliant,
yeah.
But that I did think that with Tuchel, I thought, is he doing that for the squad? Is this for his squad to hear? Yeah, I made one change. It was terrible.
Kepa's going. All right, mate. I mean,
I didn't even occur to me that you're not allowed to handle the back pass. That didn't even occur to me. But obviously, that would have been. Apparently, it would have been a free kick on the 6-yard line.
What if he
occurred to Martin Tyler? Didn't it?
If we hadn't scored, if Smith-Rowe's shot had hit the post and come out, and then they would have had to blow up for handling the back pass, and because it was in the 6-yard box, it would have been a free kick on the 6-yard line.
I bet you VAR wouldn't have given it as a back pass.
Well, common sense wouldn't have.
Yeah, I believe anything of VAR, but I think that was pretty clear cut.
Yeah, Martin Tyler just wouldn't let that go, would he?
What?
The thing about it being a back pass.
Yeah, kept saying it.
Do you reckon with commentators, I'm not saying it's time yet for Martin Tyler, and I do, and I'm a fan.
Martin Tyler, both of you do.
Which is odd because we love him. We genuinely.
Yeah, it's too late now. Martin, sorry about these two idiots. They know nothing.
Is it a little bit like with commentators in general? I mean, I've just been thinking that this week. Is it a little bit like just like when your legs go as a player, basically, just suddenly you never get it back?
No, it isn't. But when you get older, you do forget what
you went into the room for.
You just said that 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I keep saying the same thing.
Do I need a wee again? I think I do.
It's a really difficult job.
Yeah, that's when they retire, is when they can't get through a half of that needing a wee.
Yeah, the Clive Tilsley. Yeah.
I do think the and its lives have been getting progressively
its lives.
It's been a bit of a struggle
along
with those.
Everything is.
I do wonder how it is commentating to an empty stadium, though. You try and keep up that intensity when it's just completely quiet.
Do you reckon they've got the piped in?
They don't.
Oh, you said that with authority.
I did, didn't I?
Yeah.
So
they don't have the piped in. They don't have the piped in noise. So
apparently
just...
not.
Oh yeah.
I don't suppose that would help really. I mean, I imagine they wear headsets to hear their co-commentator, don't they? But
has anyone got a Brighton ticket? D with your it's the Damien Derby on the last day of the season.
Yeah, he has got to, but it's given them to me and Keith because he doesn't want to go.
Oh, okay. Gave him to your mates, did you, D? Okay.
Yeah, he did. Sorry.
Alan asked.
God, this is awkward. Don't do this now.
I'm just glad we're doing it on air.
You need to get in early and say, if anyone gets a ticket for Brighton and a spare one, give it to me. Early doors. Don't wait till it's too late.
No, absolutely right.
Or text them in 4 months.
If any listeners, if you've got a spare ticket for Brighton, give it to Ty, for God's sake.
I did text Dee this morning, and in typical Dee's fashion, he went, "Nice to hear from you."
You didn't say hello.
How have you been friends, you two?
Well, I think about 20 minutes, but no.
When did you meet? 20 years.
Started.
You were certainly going to Highbury together and bickering then.
We met queuing up for the toilets in Miami.
Queuing up for the Coke cubicle.
I said that it was a toilet, but we were queuing up outside the toilets.
And
outside a club in Miami.
I need a poo as well. Isn't that funny?
Do you support Arsenal and need a poo?
I feel really chatty as well. Do you feel chatty?
Yeah.
I always chat to total strangers when I'm queuing for a poo.
Who's your favourite Arsenal player?
I do too. When I'm queuing for a poo, by a cubicle, I never just stare at the ground totally ignoring everyone. I chat on. Some of the people I meet when I'm queuing for a poo are friends for life, particularly if we go in and have a poo together.
We've been aware of each other in kind of like Arsenal land, and also in the
toilets and nightclubs
in music. And we got chatting, and Dee sort of went, "Oh yeah, you should come with me sometime." I was like, "Yeah, no, I'd like that."
Yeah, Dee got two tickets in the hope that one day have a friend.
One day I'll be in a queue.
With you. You don't even like him.
He's 21 years later.
No, we had nice basically for about 2 years, everyone had been saying, "Oh, you should meet Tayo. You're an Arsenal fan. He's also an obsessive Arsenal fan." So we had been aware of each other.
And so it took Space in Miami. I think it was it Space in Miami?
Yeah,
Danny Tenaglia
playing for 14 hours or something like that.
It was hour 10, and we had
to. How do they do that, those guys? How do they play for so long?
They have a personal toilet. That's how they do it. If you're thinking about the pooing bit or Imodium, we've got a podcast about DJ's pooing. Actually,
I don't know how we got there. Actually,
how
long you've been friends?
Oh yeah, Brighton tickets.
Just get you off the subject of the fact that I've pinched his Brighton ticket.
Ah, well,
but you've got to assign them to us, haven't you?
Yes,
we have to track and trace and
yes,
do it. But maybe by talking about it on this podcast, we'll end up finding ourselves disqualified.
Yes, maybe. And
then you might be in anyway, too. Which is, frankly, it's a mixed blessing. It really is. Last time we played Brighton at the Emirates, we got absolutely outplayed by Graham Potter's team. Do you remember?
I also remember because I think there was an opportunity to go, and it is fair that you guys go, because having endured Burnley at 8 o'clock, was it Burnley? The 1-0 against Burnley in November, brief moment.
Worst day of my life.
I remember you saying
said without doubt, without any shadow of a doubt.
They made me sit in the rain. 58,000 empty seats undercover. No, you have to sit there. No, you can't move. The country's gone.
Could you not sit in your own seat?
No, you can't sit in your own seat, and you can't sit in any seat other than the one you've been allocated, even if it's by the corner flag in the pissing rain. You have to sit there
and lose to Burnley 1-0
and lose to Burnley for an own goal.
That was the dark days. Just to say, in my defence, I am moving house to
when
3 days
out.
Later.
This is the saga of you moving house. You're moving house 3 days later, so you're missing an Arsenal game because you're moving house 3 days later.
Yeah. Well, you can see how much crap I've got to sort out. Anyway, there you
can't
go.
Can't get made around it. Now, gentlemen, a few decades ago, private citizens used to be largely that. Private. What's changed? The internet. Think about everything you've browsed, searched for, watched, or tweeted about yourself. Mikhail. Now imagine all of that data being crawled through, collected and aggregated by podcasters and bloggers into a permanent public record. Having your private life exposed for others to see was once something only celebrities worried about, but now it's football managers. In an era where everyone is online, everyone is a public figure. And to keep my data private, when I go online, I turn to ExpressVPN. Did you know there are hundreds of data brokers out there whose sole business is to buy and sell your data? Well, I did not know that, but I do now. And do you know, the worst part is they don't have to tell you that they're buying and selling your data or get your consent. And one of these data points is your IP address. Data harvesters use your IP to uniquely identify you and your location. Every time you turn on ExpressVPN, you're given a random IP address shared by other ExpressVPN customers, which makes it more difficult for third parties to identify and harvest your data. So, if you believe your data is your business, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN on the market. Visit expressvpn.com/Tuesday and get 3 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/Tuesday to learn more.
When was the last time we beat Brighton? Did we actually beat him last time we played? Because I know they had a bit of a sign over him.
Didn't we beat them away?
Yeah.
Earlier this season.
We were going to do a quiz, actually, about who we played
in the last
couple.
Have I made that up?
We're going to play who we played in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah. Jay's sending a little message here. Yes, we beat them 1-0.
Okay.
There you go.
Dare you to get... Who scored? Go on.
Isn't it weird? I've largely blocked out this season.
your memory is quite incredible.
Yeah, but not normally, anymore.
But yeah,
Lacazette. Yeah. Jay's saying Lacazette. I still can't remember it. Can you?
Jay, can you do a drawing of it? Can you do a drawing of the goal? Just sort of a few dots where he was.
Ourselves the Arsenal podcast.
Yeah, give
a shit about it. Arsenal fans all around me in my life were just talking about not going again, giving up the season tickets. What's the point? I remember going, the last time I took my kids, I don't know if it's the last time or a recent occasion anyway, we drew 1-1 with Wolves at home. I think it was in the Emery days. And at half time, my boys, who must have been about 8 then, he turned to me and goes, "It's boring." And it was boring. I mean, Nuno's teams aren't exactly expansive, are they? But our team was... Oh, it was just dreadful. Just this sort of policy of not really going for it before half time, and the first goal is everything in every match. The first goal changes the whole, you know, and all this bullshit. Just get up the pitch. 60,000 people have paid to get in, paid a lot. It's boring. Stop boring us. What's the point of, you know? It is. Wenger never forgot. It's entertainment. You know, you can be creative and you can do amazing things on a football pitch if you try, but you can't if you're frightened. It was so dull. And part of the excitement for the kids, anyway, being at the ground, but also for us, it's nice to be in a bunch of people going, "Oh, yes, you know, jumping up. They came to one game and that bloke behind, I'm so, a year without him, actually. That's the one good thing about COVID. He talks like that, and he's really with a voice of authority, as if he knows more than anybody else. Play the ball, not the man, Arsenal. No, that's proper cock. Go to Lords. Why are you sitting in a football ground? How are people like you in here? If you're going to shout things out at Arsenal, at least affect something of a North London accent, so you fit in with the general rage.
Winners! Winners!
Yeah. And he was bellowing like this, bellowing his head off with my two kids, aged 9 and 7 or whatever they were, right in front of him, in the seats in front, the ear splitting, yelling from a monumental dickhead. You know who you are if you listen to this. How many times have you wanted to turn around and say, "Shut up" to someone behind you? And that was all that we had, all for the last months of Wenger.
We should get
most
Paul Davis
of the
on.
Emery era. People moaning and yelling and moaning. And now, can you imagine how toxic it will be now? It doesn't even bear thinking about.
I do still miss, I said it last time I was on, I still do miss our the one lone voice of hilarity who just comes out with the one comment, one comment every few weeks. If anyone knows
but
who he is.
I have to say, though, you know, terrorist humour is largely gone because the terracing's really gone. And the saddest thing I read for a while was that if they wanted to put rail seating in at the Emirates, you know, in other words, have a kind of safe standing area, they couldn't do it because the rake on the lower tier is too shallow. So for that reason, if you stand, you can't get a proper angle, so you can't get a proper view. I still think it's possible to put it in, and the people who would want to go in there wouldn't give a toss about that. Mm. And I can remember plenty of games standing on the North Bank where I couldn't see the North Bank goal. I could see the clock end goal, but if you bobbed around a bit, you could just about see the goal. You know, when there was a corner coming in at the North Bank end, you couldn't see it all, but you didn't care. You didn't want to sit down, you know. But that, yeah, they designed atmosphere out of the Emirates, as you know. They designed a home end out of it. And also, they, by not having a kind of cheaper seats for local residents policy in that part of the ground, they killed the atmosphere. So the terrorist humour of old is gone. Although, having said that, so is most of the anti-Semitism.
Which is there's been
things
a great
roundabout.
there was quite a lot of stuff recently. Stuart McFarlane, who always puts, as you'd expect, amazing pictures up because that's his job. But just some pictures of the last days of Highbury, which that anniversary came up recently. Can you remember the last game that we played in red and white? At like the traditional ones.
No, I can't.
It would have been the year before, wouldn't it?
End of the 2005 season.
It ended 7-0.
Oh, really? Everton?
Yeah, which makes it the one more year Dennis Bergkamp game, doesn't it?
Oh,
wasn't that one?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But
what a team that was.
Yeah, and I actually found, I've got them on my fridge actually, I've got a couple of picks. I found some picks of which I think is the last day at Highbury, you with a lot longer hair out and Keith with a beret on. I think Keith wore a beret on that last time.
I believe he did. I've got those pictures somewhere.
I seem to remember going to a cup final and Keith unilaterally making the decision that we should all wear berets.
He did, didn't he?
Right, as if we were a stag party, you know. And he got berets, but he couldn't get red ones, I think. So he got us all pink berets. So we're not.
I'm not wearing that.
Oh, really? Why would a group of men all wear pink berets?
This isn't the same cup final that he got lost on the Patmore Estate, was it?
Is that the one going down to Cardiff?
Driving around the Patmore Estate, he was furious.
I don't know, but I guarantee he'll be listening, and next week he will tell us which cup final it was.
Yeah. Why?
I've still got my pink beret somewhere. It's one of the many items of Arsenal memorabilia. I think I'm going to set up an Arsenal eBay account, and we can just collectively auction off all of our shit. You know,
maybe on the first.
Half the money going to Kate's research and half the money going to.
Have you still got your Keith? You still got your Keith 50th birthday T-shirt.
I don't know if I have got that. I can't remember which one I had. Yeah.
And that was Everton as well, wasn't it?
That was Portsmouth.
That was Portsmouth.
Oh, was it? And Everton the game after Portsmouth in the box.
Listener, when it was Keith's 50th, we got a box and threw a surprise party, and then we all wore T-shirts with things on them that Keith had said. My favourite one was, I've got the looks that appeal to both genders. But this isn't an obituary show for El Presidente.
He's just off this week. Yeah.
He's just off this week. Yeah, he's been an absolute mainstay lately. So, yeah, we played three at the back with Marie in the middle and Miriam next to him and old Bighorn, inexplicable selection of Saka at right wing back. Tierney at left wing back doesn't quite got his form back as he's not fully functioning. But I did like, I must say, the midfield, which was Elneny and Partey with Smith Rowe further forward.
Yeah.
I thought they were all three of them had good, really good games. Terrific amount of physical effort and endeavour and harrying and chasing. That Chelsea team under Tuchel was a hard working outfit. Yeah. And you could see Smith Rowe is every bit as good as Mason Mount, and you know, as an England regular. And some of the things he was doing was just fantastic. You know?
Well, you tweeted that the Death Row nutmeg.
Oh. He nutmegged Thiago Silva, and yeah, I paused it and took a photo of the screen. I mean, it's, you know, 55 years old.
I was just about to say how
just
old
still
are you?
Getting a kick out of shit like that. The child, I'm old enough to be his granddad.
It was tremendous. It was tremendous, boy. And it is worth it also for the it's worth it for the interview, the post match interview afterwards. I just
love his post match interviews. I love everything about him. There's nothing I don't like about him. And I must say that although Jorginho passed back without looking and Kepa was out of his goal, it was true that they'd made that mistake because Arsenal were harrying them and they were pressing high, and Smith Rowe's a big part of that. Something that Nketiah does very well too when he's playing. Get after the. We beat Liverpool last season at home when they made two errors, and then afterwards everyone says, "Well, you're lucky they made mistakes," but that mistake was definitely forced.
Mm. But so why? That's been one of the most inconsistent things. That's why when you're trying to look at like what Arteta's quote-unquote method is, or in many cases isn't, because it was a botched press which gave Villarreal their second goal, wasn't it? Like, some games we do it properly, and I don't know if it's a personnel thing. Obviously, Elneny's always been a hard-working kind of presser, but they got out on the right-hand side against us, against Villarreal, and I think I remember some of the commentary was, some of the analysis at halftime was about that kind of botch press. Is that what we do, or on the consistent level? I remember like when we started with Emery, the press was a big part of the first few games, and then that sort of kind of died
off as
well.
It's an obsession with modern coaches, isn't it? That winning it high up the pitch.
But some games we do it and some games we don't.
Personnel's key to it, though, Tio. I really, you know, Smith Rowe will always do it, and Elneny will always do it. And Nketiah will always do it. Lacazette will do it sometimes. Willian might do it sometimes.
Xhaka will do it once or twice.
Xhaka might do it. They might if they're in the mood. These senior players who aren't, you know, the reason why you're not being headhunted by Barcelona and Real Madrid like previous Arsenal players are is because you're not on it all game, every game. If you just gave your best, but, you know. Good example. And nice. I think the not selecting Elneny against Villarreal, I think, probably cost us the game. We just couldn't get hold of the game in midfield. It's a terrible, disastrous selection. And then in the next match, it's completely different personnel and formation again. And I did think Arteta's post-match interview was a bit alarming. Did you see it? Very, very angry about something that had been in the press.
Yeah.
He felt he'd been misrepresented or misquoted or something in the press and was ranting about that. And I'm watching it thinking, I have no idea what you're talking about. And there's one thing I can tell him from my life experience. If you start going around saying to people, I'm really pissed off about this thing that was in the paper, all they will say to you is, what thing? I never saw it. You're the only one who cares. You're the only one who cares, mate. No one cares, right? If you've got a problem with your squad and worrying about what they think of you and are they hacked off about something that you've said, that's your problem to sort out with them. What's in the papers doesn't matter. The only reason it's there is to sell the paper. He just betrayed a fragility and an anxiety and a nervousness about his relationship with the squad and about the fact that the semi-final had been ballsed up, and I seemed in a bad place, really.
Well, it did
I don't know what you thought.
It did show a fragility. You're 100% right there, but he also was misrepresented. Like, I think Andrew Arsblog did a sort of a breakdown of where that mistake may have happened. He answered question one after they answered question two, and then obviously the papers, knowing what they're doing, put it together in a certain way, and it did generate the conversation around Arsenal for a couple of days with him. Arguably, he should be less prickly about it. You're 100% right.
I'm someone who Googles Arsenal news daily. I don't know, finger about the gossip and see what's what daily, and I didn't pick that up.
Yeah,
you must never talk about that. Don't, you mustn't show weakness in that way. But if you are weak in that way, you can't help it, right? I mean, he's got a real vulnerability. He's obviously knows it's a mess and he's worried about his future.
I was reminded of Rafa Benitez when he did
facts.
When Ferguson had obviously got to him.
Yeah.
Obviously got to him.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, perhaps I've portrayed what I think in what I just said, which is he's worried about his future. And I think, I do sometimes think that Mikel Arteta is worried about Mikel Arteta. What Mikel Arteta is supposed to have said or not said. And, you know, in the same way that Jose Mourinho let it slip when he went to Manchester United, he says, I want to win the fourth Premier League. You think, what, don't you mean the 20th? You're a Manchester United team. It's not Jose Mourinho's Premier League titles. First of all, the first three are Roman Abramovich's Premier League titles.
You do wonder about, like, I mean, he's trying, you've got someone, he's a couple of years younger, a couple of years older than the youngest player in his team, and he's trying to impose himself still. And when it's all going, when it's going kind of tits up, I was like saying, we were talking about, I reckon he's got a picture in his basement of, you know, like Dorian Gray style, basically. There's a really, really angry sort of Medusa looking Mikel Arteta in his basement as he keeps on trying to look sort of somewhere between super calm and like sort of serial killer calm. That he has to betray himself that way.
Well, I do also think, and I don't know what you think about this, I was watching the Big Match Revisited yesterday, and I like to watch the Big Match Revisited from time to time.
Who's the commentators?
Brian Moore. It's the Brian Moore show. What a great interviewer, presenter. Does the whole thing. I imagine he does everything. He almost edits it himself. A great man, Brian Moore. But what I was going to say is, I was watching the match between Crystal Palace and Middlesbrough. Terry Cochran was playing for Middlesbrough, who later I saw play a lot for Gillingham when he was towards the end of his career. A fiery temperament, shall we say. And got involved with someone. I think he kicked Vince Hilaire, actually. You know, everybody kicked Vince Hilaire, of course, in those days.
Loved Vince Hilaire.
And he got sent off. But as he got sent off, as Terry Venables is in the dugout, the Palace manager, John Neal was a Middlesbrough manager. No one's on their feet. No, there's no technical area. There's no technical area. Right? There's no, when the Arsenal in the old days at Highbury, they had the two goldfish bowls that they, you know, by the tunnel for the away manager sat in there for the game.
Yeah.
If they got out of there, it was because something out of the ordinary had happened. I mean, probably they were having to break up a fight, you know, or maybe they were standing up because they were making the one substitution you were allowed to make in the game, which for a long time was only if a player was injured, right? They sat down. There wasn't a massive technical area for the actors that the managers and coaches now are to put on a performance for the worldwide viewing audience. How many times have you seen a manager in close up on TV looking up and catching a picture, an eye out the corner of his eye, himself on a massive jumbotron? They sit down and shut up. Do you see Ancelotti on his feet yelling and screaming?
Yes.
Do you see Hodgson yelling and screaming? Not much. Partly because they're ancient, but there's very much a thing.
His knees have gone.
Yes, his knees have gone. This really is a modern manager thing, that prowling around the technical area, yelling your head off so that everyone can see you.
But hasn't this very podcast before sat there and said that we haven't had any, like, we haven't had that exhortation from the manager.
Well, it's exactly my point. For a long time, Arsene would sit there and didn't want people getting up and shouting, and would put his arm across Steve Bould if he felt like shouting something. And really, it was his philosophy was don't yell at them. They're doing their best, and we'll only confuse them and put them off. And it used to, if we were losing at home, and you'd look across at the where we sit behind the away technical area, and there's half a dozen coaches and all the subs up, and there was a feeling of an invading army, and why are we all sitting down quiet and they're all making a racket?
Yeah.
Why can't we get up and do some shouting? We're losing. Why isn't anyone angry on the bench? And we did used to think it helped. And now we have got this. We've had it with the last two managers. Emery and his coaches never shut up through a game.
God, yeah.
Emery just bouncing around on his haunches, skipping about in his shiny shoes, looking so anxious and animated. And now Arteta never shuts up telling him what to do for an hour and a half. Now I long for someone with a, who only says something when they really do think, actually, I've got an important point to make here. So that if they do hear that voice, they're going to think, oh, something must be up.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking, oh, please, God, shut up. I'm trying to mark him. I'm knackered. I've just run 60 yards three times in a minute. Yeah. This guy has beats me every time he's got the ball. No one's helping me. You keep picking that clan in midfield. Shut up!
Something it's, else. It's micromanagement, isn't it?
It's the technical area. And I think they should make the technical area 2 foot by 2 foot.
I think sort of maybe like an it's a knockout thing. And you can you have like one of those big sort of like cotton buds, like giant cotton buds, and you're allowed to hit him once a half.
I think they should be in a soundproof booth like yeah. Mr. and Mrs.
What's Sean that game? Dodge. What's that game we used to have as kids where you move around and if you touch the wire, then you get like a little buzz?
Operation.
Basically. So yeah, maybe we need like that. Maybe like electrocuted if you leave
electric fence like a glut for cattle.
You see, if some of these plans have been put forward for the European Super League, I could have got behind it.
So it's like it's around a technical area.
It's like it's a knockout. Means
these things will turn up in the Europa Conference League, which we are which we are hurtling towards. I tell you who used to like a little turnaround from where we used to sit. Another thing I miss. And much as though he used to annoy me, but Frank Lampard was not above. You know, like, you know, you think footballers are supposed to rise above it. Frank yeah. Lampard used to love a turnaround when they beat us, didn't he? Just nod his head. Yeah. All the abuse he'd get, and then they'd beat us with one of his deflected goals, or if he when he was on the bench as the manager, and he'd turn around and be like, yeah, all right, mate, with a big old kind of smile on his face. I love the fact that he wasn't above it. But on what you were saying about the kind of all the exhortations, Al, again, in this Tuchel interview I was reading this morning, fast developing a huge crush on him because he just seems like a bit of a chap. I quite like him. But he was saying, they were talking about what his routine is for match days, and he said something which Arsenal fans will recognise. He was like, for a very big game, the more tension there is, the less you fill their heads and the less you try new ideas. And I immediately thought of a false nine. In a semi-final, the bigger the game, the more tension there is. Tell them less.
Mm-hmm.
Confuse.
I remember, really remember. I'm sure I've talked about this on here before. Going to Villa Park in '98 for the cup semi-final against Wolves, and Wolves hadn't had a really good cut run for a few years, and their fans were bang up for it. Big support at Villa Park, and there were black and gold balloons everywhere, all over the pitch, all around the place. And obviously a huge Arsenal support as well, but we were thinking, wow, they're really up for this. Big atmosphere. It's a great, great ground, Villa Park. Arsenal come out. Wenger's walking as if he's got 40 minutes to get to the dugout. The players saunter out. No one's got their fists clenched. No one's yelling at one another. No one's turning to us and say, come on, and none of that. They're just ambling out like it's early morning practice, like the actual game's tomorrow. So, and I was thinking, oh, this is worrying. They don't look up for this at all. But it's everything about Wenger was counterintuitive. So, like you were saying with Tuchel there, this is a time when I really need to exude more calm than ever. I have to be ultra calm because they cannot play the way I want them to play, the way they play best, these players, if they're tense. They need to be relaxed. There needs to be flowing, cohesive football. In the end, the victory was effortless.
And would you say...
In fact, he probably thought, thank God they're all hyped up and pumped up like lunatics. This makes our job easier.
Yeah.
And would you say that it was... obviously, it's a lot easier with the better players. So is the counter-argument that you need to... these instructions need to be a lot tighter or more stringent because it's a system that's going to win rather than players because we don't have the players, just as an argument?
I don't know about that. I think what he had was a pattern of how to play football. He knew how he wanted to play. They all knew how they wanted to play. The thing I really remember
with
Vieira
and Anelka and Bergkamp.
When we had a free kick in midfield, if someone tripped Vieira, he would put his hand on the ball, not wait for anyone to go back 10 yards, not wait for Tony Adams to stand in the opposition centre penalty spot and chip it into him. He'd put his hand in the ball and just pass it to the nearest Arsenal player 2 yards away and get going again.
Yeah.
Not allow the rhythm to be broken up. And if you watch old clips, which I do because when I try and line up commentaries for Spot the Commentary, what you notice, particularly about the 04-05 period, is the speed at which we move the football around the pitch. It's ping, 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 ping. Yeah. It's everything happens so quickly and continued to do so when he brought Santi Cazorla into the side and Fabregas, get give. It's the ponderous, slow, have a look, go back, have a look, go back. That drives us mad. Wenger would have kittens. That would get him in the technical area. If he saw someone looking up, nothing really on, turn around, go backwards. The forwards are thinking, he's not going to pass it anyway, so what's the point of making a run? And the game just dies.
I've just got this image in my head of this Guardiola side against that 98 Wenger side, and just Fernandinho doing his systematic fouling on the halfway line and Vieira taking it really quick. Like, I could just see like a set piece where like Vieira tries to take it, like puts a hand on the ball and take it 2 yard pass, only for Fernandinho to break it up again. So the game not leaving the halfway circle, the halfway line, one or two of them systematic fouls versus
look,
that.
Fernandinho is a great player.
Lovely player.
But
massive
Dennis would leave a foot in on Fernandinho after 5 minutes.
And that would be the end of
and
it.
And Patrick would hit him so hard.
Yeah.
It would really struggle. Those two players, Vieira and Bergkamp, good enough for any football team that's ever played the game, and including this current Man City side.
You did ask us this week. We were wondering about like Mikel Arteta's music choices.
I did say to these two lads, working as they have done for many years in the music industry, it's a bit of a void on the football front this weekend. Why don't you come up with Mikel Arteta's Desert Island Discs? And do you know what? I think they have.
Well, no, interestingly.
Or did it just lead to the two of you falling out?
Our relationship strong enough to get over to Arteta's Desert Island Discs?
Nice. So you couldn't agree on the choices?
Well, nice. Not just do three each?
Nice to hear. Nice to hear from you.
Hello, stranger. Who's this?
Does anyone know any tickets for Brighton? Oh, I see. They've gone, have they?
Sorry, new phone. Who dis? Papula. I used to know someone called. Yeah.
And then have you made any choices?
Well, interesting. We
Mikel's
both
Desert Island Disc.
We approached it very differently.
Okay.
Because Tayo went for
Thursday, 15th of April. Hello, dear. No response. Okay, until today. All right, fair enough.
Come on.
Hello.
Lads.
Anyway, sorry, Karen. What did you go for, Dean?
Well, no, you went for.
Will someone say a song?
Sunday, 4th of April. Manchester.
Are we doing this now?
No,
we
don't have to do this now. Well,
2013, nothing.
I've got, Shaggy, It Wasn't Me, in terms of some of the some of the way he kind of deflects the attention.
Good shout, D. Have you got one?
Well, no, I went for more just to sort of the personality behind Mikel Arteta. T just sort of went for song titles that reflect where we are as a club and where his management career is.
Yeah.
What was the other one you went for, T?
Well, I reckon he's in the
kitchen. You're going to miss me when I'm gone. Yeah,
Turntable Orchestra, you're going to miss me when I'm gone. I thought that would be a big one for him. I did friend of me and Dee's, Sean Roberts, came up with a perler, which is Right Place, Wrong Time by Dr. John. So
very good.
That'll be in there
these
as well.
These are good. Dee, you're reticent about yours.
Well, I don't.
Absolute classic fence sitting.
Yeah. Oh, you're noticing, are you? Yeah.
The shiny top of your fence.
Genesis, In Too Deep.
Oh, yeah, very good. You see, I went more for, I reckon he's...
Say one.
Shakira. When he wants to let his hair down, he likes a bit of Shakira. But I don't
think his hips don't lie.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, when Mrs. Arteta like has her friends round and she has a bit of a disco.
You think he actually likes the music of Shakira?
I don't think he likes any music. I think he probably heard something at a training thing, something really intense. I think
Spanish like, Pipe Dream. There's a song called Julio Spanish
Iglesias. I think he likes really intense Spanish guitar music, and then
I mean, it is 20 years. Well, it's a bit more than that, but do you think he's ready for the Big Beat revival?
No.
Have you in your travels around the globe with your box of CDs, have you played in the Basque country at all?
Yes.
You have?
I don't think I ever did. No, I would have tried to get a Bilbao game in there somewhere along the line, if Atletico game.
Well, is are we counting Barcelona?
No.
No, okay.
Catalunya, my friend.
Played in Barcelona.
I am Thomas Partey, my friend.
But I also reckon Sean Roberts did also suggest like his luxury item would be a plan as well,
luxury item, a technical area.
Harsh, but fair.
Oh, dear. Okay, I'm going to do you some spot the commentaries. Are you ready? Are you ready?
Arsenal really haven't got into gear yet, but now they might with Merson. Real chance for him and a goal. Arsenal, first attack, and Merson's finish was clinical. Steve Coppell, honest enough to admit in the Palace newspaper, blame me for everything that's wrong, he says.
Left Paul that on Merson to give you a clue.
Crystal Palace, 1987?
No, later than that.
Merse against Palace.
Yeah.
91.
No.
I can only remember one Paul Merson goal at this very moment in time, and it's the one that I only ever remember the one he scored against Leeds in the FA Cup.
Oh, really? This one he ran through and spanked it with the outside of his right foot, and they should just play it to Kai Havertz, because if you want to see how to finish a one-on-one...
Yes.
Watch Paul Merson against Crystal Palace at Sellers Park in the 1992-93 season.
Oh, I was close.
Just a pass through the middle. He just runs onto it. Three strides. Bash.
Yeah.
Just leathered it.
Death Row's little outside of the right foot pass.
Beautiful.
It's all Merce, isn't it?
Just beautiful.
Very, very nice.
I might have to go down and Paul Merson wormhole, actually. I used to love him. Can't remember.
Mercy's chips. Look out for his chip against Sheffield Wednesday when we hit seven. He could get the ball in the corner of the box and float it over the keeper into the far side. Mm. Okay, hang on a minute. I'm going to find you another one.
A Dennis Bergkamp goal came up this week, which is one that I barely remembered. I'm sure you did, Dee. I think it was against Derby. Where he's running away from goal in the box, but then still manages to put a sand wedge over the keeper's head. It's an amazing goal.
Yeah, and not even into the opposite corner.
Yeah, not even in the way you said that, D, is like, well, yeah. I mean, did you not remember
If you watch the DVD of Dennis Bergkamp's Arsenal goals, of which there are 120, if you thought he was good before you watched it, just watch those goals. Every single, I promise you, every single goal he scored for Arsenal, he picked the square of the net he was aiming for. Every single one is so elegantly side-footed, placed. If he's driving it, it's hit with colossal force into exactly the spot he wanted it to go. Every single goal is stylish and elegant. Just this a truly remarkable human being. And he made two holes in Danny Mills' ankle.
That's the afternoon sorted. It's his birthday last week. Did you celebrate it, D?
Always.
Okay, you ready for this one?
Edu lines it up now for Reyes. And the breakthrough happens for Dennis Bergkamp. They found the telling ball at last. Finding Thierry Henry. From that side again, it's Hall who clears. Now Reyes. Two!
sometimes you just have to hold your hands up and say what a superb strike that was from Reyes. Vieira. This is Bergkamp. Thierry Henry steers it through for Vieira! And he can walk it in!
That is, that's Tottenham. That last one's Tottenham, isn't it?
No, those are the first four goals in a 5-1 win against
Chelsea?
No.
Crystal Palace.
Crystal Palace, of course, Steve. No. There's the theme. I played them all because they're all such great goals. And it's the 2004-05 season where we lost the title and the double to Roman Abramovich. I mean, really, we should have had.
Yeah.
Three doubles in a row. We should have just won three doubles in a row, and we blew two titles, and didn't manage it. But anyway, we ended up with two FA Cups and one title between 2003 and 2005. Arsenal were out of this world. Just so good. The goals, everything that Henry does in those clips, everything that Bergkamp does. Reyes was sensational in that game.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even sunny that day. He could do it, under a grey sky.
He scored that amazing goal. That was against Chelsea, wasn't it?
He scored a goal against Chelsea in the cup where he screamed one in the top corner. Yeah.
And we're talking about those doubles. Whenever I do think about the one that we blew, another stage of our relationship, dear, we were in Paris together for that Keown Bolton one, weren't we?
Remember? Yes, yes. At the old Alliance.
We went 2-0 up. You were having your gap year in Paris about 25 years later than most people take gap years.
Yeah. Yeah, at the old Alliance, which is where Stan Collymore hit Ulrika Jonsson.
Oh, is that?
Yeah. It's the best. The very
I didn't see the plaque. Yeah, I was going to say. Didn't see the blue plaque outside, so I'll believe you. But yeah, what a you have to live in that. But someone goes to me, "Oh, you lot always living in the past." It's because the past was a brilliant place when we were really good at football.
Yeah,
when
the present is a little bit painful.
Did you see? Now I know this is the sort of thing that you usually would hate, Al. The interview with Smith Rowe and Saka, and I think it's sort of based around the new kit, and it's about 3-minute interview with the two of them talking, and they sort of interviewing each other, and they're talking about what their first times, first training sessions, first time they got asked to train with the first team. No, it's not the sort of thing you would hunt down.
It's
really
not.
Worth
seeing. It's on the club website, is it?
It was one of their tweets. It's probably in association with Adidas or something like that. It's actually really, really good. And they talk about those times and their memories and how everywhere around the club are those memories of Bergkamp, Perez, Vieira.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
And they want to have their own
and they
pictures on the wall.
Create those memories, yes.
Which I'm sure they will. I mean, I've no doubt they will.
Anyone else from Holland FC going to make it for you? Joe Willock still knocking them in all
over.
Mate,
they've just got to bring
them.
Don't
stop him off.
Don't do it to me. You know. This is an absolute red flag to you, what you've done there.
I wanted to put the kettle on. He was reminiscing.
Let me reminisce. Don't wind me up. If this arsehole sells some of these kids, someone should burn the ground down, and it might be me. But I honestly don't.
Let's go back to the past.
Don't get me started. Okay, here we go.
Cause for concern for Crystal Palace. Pepe tries again. It's a bit better this time too. And it drops here for Sokratis. And Arsenal have an early lead. And that should settle them down nicely.
2018.
No.
No. 2019.
It was a momentous afternoon at the Emirates. Can you have a stab at the opponents? They were mentioned.
Crystal Palace.
Yeah. Sokratis scored after 7 minutes. We scored again 2 minutes later. Do you remember it? Wow.
And we're the younger
David Luiz put us 2-0 up after 9 minutes. This was towards the end of Unai Emery's reign. And, of course, the team at that time, it felt as though they were drilled to go into a certain set of behaviours when they had established a 2-0 lead. They did that.
It's not that. It's not the Zaha.
Zaha got booked for diving.
It's not the Kishout. Is
and
it the one? It's the
Granit Xhaka.
Oh my God! Yes,
it's the Granit Xhaka substitution when things were really dark, and Unai Emery lost his job not long after that. But we had a 2-0 lead, and if you watch those highlights on the YouTube, you'll see us go 2-0 early, and then we don't really go to try and get 3 and 4. We then go into some game management with virtually an hour and a half to go. And of course, concede twice and draw.
Yeah.
And we should have had another goal, but it was wrongly cancelled out. It was a VAR, balls up, first of many. But what's most interesting about, if you see the Granit Xhaka thing now, we were so focused on Xhaka. Everyone was booing him. He threw the armband in the mud rather than give it to somebody, you know. He took his shirt off as he got to the touchline. The rage all around. And no one really was noticing Unai Emery. And Emery goes over and kind of pats him on the shoulder, sort of consolatory. And he brought on Bukayo Saka in his place wearing a 77 shirt. And of all the people that it was disrespectful to from Xhaka, his own ego ran riot. It was Emery. He didn't give a shit about Emery. It's so disrespectful to the manager. The board's up. The manager wants you off. He's going to put someone else on. This is about the manager's decision. It's about he made it all about him, and then went into a load of tweets and public messaging about how, you know, social media bullshit bollocks. Get off it if you don't like it. Get off it. You don't have to be on it. And they obviously didn't care about Emery. They weren't playing for him. And now you see him with a highly motivated Villarreal team in the Europa League final. I know the language was a problem, really a big problem for him, I think. But the lack of respect, it was marked, you know. He just strode past Emery as if he hated him. He was all concerned about himself. It was a really, really, really dark, a horrible day.
Oh, hideous.
And I think, actually, in a way, it's probably quite good there haven't been fans in this season, because these home defeats we've had, maybe we wouldn't have had so many, I don't know.
It's the moment he reached for the, I do remember that day, you remember the Emery bit, I just remember you were quite, it's the moment that he reached for the armband and the shirt.
When he took his shirt off, we looked like he was going to throw it on the floor, and that's when I lost my rag completely, as did everyone around us. But none of us were thinking about Emery. It's only when you see it again, all this time, like a year and a half later, whatever it is, you think, oh, wow. God, that was so disrespectful to his manager.
And there he is still being an important cog in his team. And that in itself is an issue.
And it was disrespectful to Bukayo Saka too. You're the captain. You're not having a good day. You're being subbed. There's an 18-year-old boy coming on in your place. It's on you to say to him, you know, don't be afraid, go for it, show you what you can do, this is your chance, you know, whatever you might say to an 18-year-old boy as you're passing him. And Saka puts his hand out to kind of do the hand slap, and he really belts Saka's hand. And I thought, what is wrong with this bloke?
I was thinking about...
It doesn't get any better on second view a year and a half later.
Saka and Emery, was the coming of age of Saka, if I've got it right. I don't know why the name sticks in my a game. It was a Europa League game against maybe a German opposition away from home.
That Saka had a brilliant game against Standard Liège.
Liège, right, okay.
It's a game that we went to remember? And he put in an incredible cross that hit Lacazette hard on the head. Just hit him. Just swerved it in and hit him on the head. And it flew in the net. And that got us back to 2-1. And then he cut in from the left. I think it was Martinelli he played a 1-2 with and curled one with his right foot into the corner. And not for the first time. He thought, these two moments of football genius are so reminiscent of Lionel Messi that we really have got someone here.
And I mean, I guess my point is that the Europa League brought these guys on, really. And Emery gave them...
Forstler Polatva, he played against. Emery
gave them their chance.
Yes, I think that's true. The Europa League has been really big of helping, I think about Smith Rowe as well and also Joe Willock scoring goals in the Europa League and getting opportunities. Balogun getting opportunities and scoring goals in the Europa League. So in that respect, if we're in some football combination competition, so much the better. There was a tweet by Henry Winter on the other day. Henry Winter writes for The Times. I was absolutely staggered that he's got 1.2 million Twitter followers. I mean, that just shocked me to my core.
Rolled down the cheek of the beautiful guy.
And the tweet is, Arsenal, full stop. Back Arteta, full stop. I don't you mean there's a consonant you've got wrong there? build around Smith Rowe, superb v hashtag CFC tonight, and Saka, Tierney, Partey, Martinelli strengthened in the summer, shed the likes of Willian, Bellerin, Guendouzi, Torreira, Kolasinac, Kroenke, see the path ahead, accelerate the process, rebuild. I mean, it's monumentally pompous, as so much of what he does is. But why? There's some people who really have
got a point.
Bought into the process thing. I mean, just totally bought into it, and then make an announcement like this, buoyed by their massive Twitter following that people think that their voice is worth listening to. Get idiots like me reading it out on our own podcast. I mean, I look at that with a gape. What are you? Who are you to post something like that completely without humour, irony, or for no reason at all? And where is the evidence that Arteta's worth backing? And my message would be, Mikel, sort this shit out. Get a system of playing and back it yourself, or you're going to lose your job. Stop chopping and changing. Stop being timid. Stop reading the papers. Don't walk away from Arsenal whenever the time comes, and it might be sooner than you want, regretting not doing what you wanted to do. How do you want a football team to play, Mikel? What's your fantasy football? What's the side that you would pay to see? What do you want to happen on a pitch when your team gets the ball? Do you want them to pass backwards, or do you want to take shots? Do you want shots on goal? Do you want Rob Green came down to the Emirates once, and that was a showreel. He had 25 saves or something. De Gea once faced, from an Arsenal team, 33 shots on goal. Saved 32 of them. You know, what do you want your football team to look like, Mikel? What do you want a game of football to be like if you were paying to get in? What do you want to see? Work it out. Work it out in your head and go and execute it. Stop trying to be a coach. Stop thinking about tinkering. Stop looking at other people. You know enough about football. What do you want your team to be like? And then it will be that. Look at Bielsa. That's what he wants his team to be like. Front foot, everyone making runs, high energy. Great talk. Imagine Elland Road this season. What a tragedy it's been empty. Really, for those Leeds fans who've had 16 years away from the top division, could have been there for this. They'd have even more points. They would have more points because Elland Road would be rocking and they'd be up there in the top six. He hasn't worked it out and he's going to leave embittered. It's going to be angry. It wasn't fair. COVID wasn't fair. The press weren't fair. I couldn't get the players in. It's not fair. This thing can go right for me. Aubameyang got malaria. It all went wrong. I remember the thing, one of the things, and I know we talk about Wenger a lot, one of the things I really remember about Wenger was if a player was injured or suspended, it was as if they didn't exist. He didn't think about them.
Mm.
If people said to him, well, you didn't have Vieira today, did you? I had 11. They're in my squad. They're my players. We've got good players. He's not here. Doesn't exist. Never an excuse.
It wasn't.
Here endeth the lesson. But I really, honestly, if this guy doesn't start deciding what he wants to see in a football pitch and making it happen, he's going to lose his job and regret everything about being here.
I think he knows he's not losing his job for a while, though, because it fits with what the Cronkies want in terms of we've got a manager in there, hasn't cost a load. He hasn't had any fans, so they've got these ready-made excuses. They've got COVID ready for him as an excuse as well for dwindling finances. He's not going anywhere anytime soon, I don't think. He's going to have a... We'll see whether they back him this summer. We'll have fans back next season. He's certainly not going anywhere next season.
You're probably right.
Well, I mean, if we get to November and things haven't turned around or there aren't signs of improvement, then, which is pretty much what happened with Unai, wasn't it, as well?
Also, listen, if you're a top Premier League club, you'd be pretty foolish to not invite Brendan Rodgers for an interview at the moment. And, you know, I don't care who you are. I don't care, if it's Manchester United or any, you know. And Brendan Rodgers isn't going to leave Leicester City. If they play the FA Cup final, listener, you know the score by now, but we're 4 hours from kickoff. And they're very likely in the Champions League, although they face a Champions League playoff, effectively, don't they, against Chelsea, because if Liverpool win their three matches, whoever doesn't win that Chelsea-Leicester game is not qualifying for the Champions League.
It's mad, isn't it?
It's really mad. But anyway... What can we do? Just talk about it all the time, don't we? No one knows what's going to happen.
I'm hoping that he's going to have a long summer holiday where he can walk intensely on the beach listening to Shakira and thinking about what it is he wants his team. All these questions from you,
I really, Davis. He must, because I just feel so many regrets in his life if he doesn't sort him. He's so worried about all the wrong things. And he's got to get these. He's got this wonderful, talented bunch of kids, and he just needs to let the phrase recurs, doesn't it?
He's losing one of his generals over this. Like, do you see the David Luiz?
He's leaving, is he?
He's leaving. David Luiz is. Yeah.
Someone told me that Willian wants to leave, and there's,
great.
We were arguing about
which one of us was going to drive him to the airport.
Keith's in a van driving around West London. Right, big bloke, curly hair, big, out here.
Players he'd like to kidnap to stop them ever playing for Arsenal again. I had a tweet from YZ17, at Not You Bentley. There's our Twitter feed.
Have we got 1.2 million?
We've got 10,000 followers, and Henry Winter's got 1.2 million. And Gary Neville's got 4.5 million Twitter followers. He's like Barack Obama.
Yikes.
What's going on? I don't really go on it that much, but I had a look for some reason. Because someone sent me that. Anyway. This guy says, you'd have been proud of me yesterday. I'm on a chipping green at Thorndon Park Golf Club. A sprightly teddy shithouserium walks up and says, where's the practice net, fella? And he said, over there by that sign that says practice net. And classic freeloading scum. He finishes it with a one-word insult. This is how all Teddy Sheringham anecdotes traditionally finish. Yeah. It's usually twat or wanker. In this case, it's tool.
There you go.
Over there, but that sign that says practice net, tool. Do you want a quiz?
Yeah.
Emery or Eisenhower? Don't defend yourself. Don't explain. Don't worry. Emery or Eisenhower?
It's certainly not.
It was Emery. It was too cohesive. So I'm going Eisenhower.
It was Eisenhower in a letter to someone called Omar Bradley. I don't know who that is. But that really should be on Mikel Arteta's wall. Don't defend yourself. Don't explain. Don't worry. Decide what you want them to do, Mikel, and just stick with it. We need to push. We need to have ambition. We need to have desire to improve every day.
Unai.
Simple words, Unai.
Unai, before Arsenal beat Cardiff 3-2 away in September 2018.
Oh, obviously worked. A very motivational man.
By leadership, we mean the art of getting someone else to do something that you want done because he wants to do it.
Got to be Eisenhower.
It's got to be Eisenhower.
But it's a great quote, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is really, these are such good quotes for a football manager. It's getting someone to do something that you want done, and that it's because they want to do it that it happens. That is really football management in a nutshell.
Patrick Vieira, a little bit of Vaseline on his thingy, getting it because he wants to do it.
Bit of Vicks. I believe that football, perhaps more than any other sport, tends to instill in men the feeling that victory comes through hard work, team play, self-confidence, and an enthusiasm that amounts to dedication. Emery or Eisenhower?
I'm
going to go Eisenhower talking about American football.
Well, it is Eisenhower from his memoir, At Ease, in 1967.
And he didn't know. That's excellent. He didn't know.
And presumably it is Gridiron. He's on about yeah, not soccer. But another marvellous quote from Eisenhower. I do not stop for news when it's not true. I do not stop for news when it's not true. Emery or Eisenhower?
I'm going to go Emery.
It's all one-syllable English words, so
It is Emery. Do you want to have a guess about the player he's talking about?
Xhaka.
Granit Xhaka.
Mesut Ozil.
Remember
Mesut
him.
Ozil. That, he was the fly in the ointment, the stone in the shoe of Unai Emery when he really couldn't get that relationship sorted out.
I am hoping, Dino, in your new house, you've got Dennis, but could you put the Mesut versus Ludogorets goal on your ceiling?
There's someone in there at the moment doing
that's
that.
Gorgeous,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Someone should do that photo. It would be amazing, painted on the ceiling.
Oh, Mesut.
Someone do a montage of all Mesut's look-away passes.
Oh,
I'm surprised Tayo hasn't already, actually.
Okay, here's one. My father always said you have to value and respect the responsibility you've been given.
I'm feeling Emery for that one.
I'll go Eisenhower.
It's Emery when he was manager of Sevilla in 2015. One of the things a leader occasionally needs is the inspiration he gets from the people he leads.
Eisenhower, that's far too...
Eisenhower, he wouldn't say leader, would he, Emery?
Because he doesn't know what...
I need to learn to smile more. Emery or Eisenhower?
A very intense Unai Emery.
Emery.
Yeah, it was Emery, and we were playing Liverpool the next day, and he was comparing himself to Jurgen Klopp. I need to learn to smile more because, of course, Jurgen always smiles. No matter when he's smiling, you can usually assume that he's furious about a refereeing decision. Particularly unique Jurgen Klopp smile when you know he's angry. and that was before we drew 1-1 with Liverpool at the Emirates.
There used to be another manager I know used to annoy you with his fake, like that kind of fake laugh on the sideline. It's going to come back probably by next pod.
Allardyce
does a good fake laugh.
Allardyce is chewing gum. The sight of it is so revolting. I think that's what sent West Brom down in the end. It's just too, you can't look at him. I need to continue reading books, and I like to learn about different people in the world, different people with success in and outside of football. Slightly giving away at the end.
Yeah,
I'm going to go on Unai.
Morale, the will to win, the fighting heart are the honoured hallmarks of the football coach and player. Now bear in mind that, you know, some of these might be in translation.
Yeah.
Emery pre-Arsenal Emery?
No, I'm going to go for the chapter from his autobiography.
That's Eisenhower. And Eisenhower. He was speaking at the very first American Football Hall of Fame dinner in October 1958. Excellent quiz, John. Don't know how to say your surname. Brannis? Brannis got a... It's one of these slightly Scandi-looking things where there's an A and an E combined. And I don't know how you say that, but apologies, John Brannis. Brannish? Brannai? Who knows? We have also been sent in Napoleon or Nasri. I like to be the winner. I like to change. I like to make history. Nasri or Napoleon?
I think that's Nasri.
It is. It's Samir Nasri after joining Antalyaspor of Turkey.
Oh, that is sensational. I would have got Napoleon.
The people to fear are not those who disagree with you, but those who disagree with you and are too cowardly to let you know.
That could be Nasri as well.
Nasri talking about growing up on the streets of Marseille, or is it Napoleon talking about running a massive army?
Annexing Belgium.
I'm going to go Napoleon, but only just.
I'm going to go Nasri.
It is Napoleon. Two here now. One, let the path be open to talent. And the other one is, ability is nothing without opportunity. Who said that?
Well, the second one's definitely Napoleon. Ability of opportunity is one of his famous ones. I'm pretty sure.
They're both Napoleon.
Yeah.
They're both Napoleon. Not everyone in life has a second chance, and I do.
That's
Napoleon
Nasri.
Or Nasri?
That's got to be Sammy Nasri when he joined.
It's ironically, given that he was, you know, of all, it was Napoleon who had the most famous second chance of all figures in history. But in fact, it was Nasri after joining West Ham in January 2019.
It must be written on the walls there. I've come for your second chance. Yes. Welcome to
Last Chance Saloon. That's the name of the London Stadium.
I've got one here. A cutlass or a car aerial. Any will do.
Razor Ruddock.
If you want a thing done well, do it yourself.
That's Napoleon.
That's Napoleon. Yeah. From time to time, I'm a jerk.
That is Sammy Nasri.
Oh,
it's a bit too self-aware for Sammy Nasri.
Sammy Nasri when he was playing for Manchester City in 2015. Yeah. Really, and that's that quiz is also supplied by the same John Branagh. So thank you for those. Marvellous contributions. Well, gentlemen, I might knock this on the air, but I've been going on for ages.
Fair play.
I thought, we won't have much to talk about this week, because there's not much to talk about.
And here we are.
But you managed to just about head me off from going on. I'm genuinely fearful about Maitland-Niles and Willock and Reece Nelson, all of whom I really like and would love to see playing for Arsenal. I really do fear. I think, if you're going to sell them all and you buy some... You know, if Thierry Henry, Dennis Bergkamp, and Robert Pires, I'll just about be able to cope. But if you bring in Lucas Torreira and, you know what, you know, Nicola Pepe and these sort of signings, and you let those boys go, you're a damn fool. You're a damn fool.
Yes. I'm trying. It's like working with some very highly explosive thing. I just sort of don't know what to say. Both me and T are sort of
It's funny that that's how you feel, because some people in my life think, let's set him off. Namely all three of my children.
Just say Reece Nelson.
Reece Nelson. I mean, really, and I know it's stupid, but when he put Bukayo Saka at right wing back, right, and all right, fine, and then he yanked him for Hector, and then Hector got injured and he yanked him for Jay. If you want to put an attacking, expansive right wing back in, you want to give someone a go there, pick Reece Nelson there, just as Tuchel has picked Hudson-Odoi in that position for Chelsea, because that is a guy, just as Conte did with Victor Moses. If you've got a player who's really diligent, who's really hardworking, gives everything for the shirt, but can dribble and cross and shoot and is fast and can get the opposition, that's a good bet for a right wing back, and that's Reece Nelson. And they're you know, it's, So if you want to meet up down the pub after the Brighton game,
oh yeah, I'll watch
me
on
and Keith will tell you what it was like. If anyone's got a ticket, for God's sake, give it to Tayo.
Please.
See you later.
Cheers, mate. Cheers.